Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast, joined as always by miraculous Max Montana, and our guest today, associate head coach for the California Golden Bear rugby team, Tom Billups. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Welcome to campus, guys. Yeah.
So we're here at the University of California, Berkeley. School year has just begun, which means preparation for the next, hopefully, championship season of Cal Rugby has just begun. So let's just go ahead and dive into it. And what is this early preparation part of things look like for the Golden Bears?
Well, it's really to become operational as a team, try to get all 50 guys' noses pointed in the right direction. And then as we drill down into the various buckets, if you will, of our organization or our team, it's about establishing some technical standards, both in the locker room, in the training zone, and on the field, and just kind of really establishing how we do business as a sports team.
So a couple of months ago, we got to talk with Jack Clark, head coach for Cal Rugby, about a lot of the stuff that makes up the team culture, really the incredible team culture that's made Cal so successful. 23 of the last 34 national championships, correct?
Somewhere around there.
I guess it's hard to keep track.
I'm always looking forward to the next one, so try to earn the next one.
Yeah, so if you haven't watched or listened to that episode, please go back and do that. So you serve a very unique role. Your title, associate head coach, but in addition to coaching rugby on the field, you know, technique, strategy, all that stuff, you also serve as the strength and conditioning coach for the team. So tell us a little bit about why you guys decided to go with that route and the role you serve there.
Well, in fact, I'd probably even back up another step, Chad, in the fact that I'm heavily involved in the recruiting of our student athletes. So it's really from cradle to grave, almost, if you will, in that student athlete experience. But you know, my role is a little bit unique on this campus, in the fact that I am doing both, and it was really driven by necessity. I think this is the 15th year that I've been overseeing our strength and conditioning aspect of the program. I had a strong personal background in it because I needed to have that as a competitive player, and so when we had a turnover in strength coaches within the university strength and conditioning unit, said, well, how about you do it? And away I went. So it provides me a real unique opportunity doing both. I have to be really economical and hopefully articulate with my voice, because otherwise I'm going to sound like that teacher on the Peanuts cartoons. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, wah, 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 you know. And, you know, I consider it a real privilege to have both of those roles. It's a good challenge.
And it's really something that a lot of teams lose out on the synergistic nature of how skill training, you know, sport practice, and physical preparation need to be married,
right?
But you can see, you know, if it was a harder practice this day, and we can back things off, and where this role of like high performance director is becoming a bit more prevalent, and people are doing that. But in my background, track and field, it's almost always the same person. You know, the throws coach also runs the lifting kind of thing. So as you look at balancing these two aspects, the two biggest aspects it takes to be a successful rugby player, you know, the skill of your sports skill and the physical preparation, you know, how do you guys break that up throughout the year, like different phases?
Well, certainly we would within our annual plan, we would have, you know, kind of three distinct cycles, if you will, and then, you know, the goals that we're trying to achieve in those cycles. Obviously the off season we're trying to amass, you know, our hypertrophy and our general strength phase. or phases, and then once we get them on campus, then we're going to try to convert that increased strength into some explosive power as we start to phase in the demands of the energy systems, where, you know, it's kind of like that dimmer switch where we're constantly kind of turning the lights up and down, you know, by way of energy systems. And at the same time, we're folding in skill acquisition, because what we can't forget is that we're training to be rugby players. We're not training to train. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the goal that I try to constantly keep in the forefront of all of our planning, is what are we trying to get ready to do again? Let's not lose sight of that. And so we try to make stuff as relevant and as realistic as possible. You know, the specificity is really, you know, important to us. But we can use a lot of creativity to stress and to challenge our athletes, you know, throughout the year differently. Once we get into the season, well, then the main training stimulus is just the game of rugby itself. And it's not for everybody. And we have to really watch our fatigue levels. And, you know, we'll rotate some guys around, and it's a real craft. And I say craft because it's not all sports science. We're dealing with human beings, you know, young adults. And it's not all subjective art where, you know, you're kind of going, well, you look about right. You know, it's a mix of all that. And because those are kind of our three distinct seasons, you know, the off season, the preseason or transitional season that we're in now, and then the end season when we're going to try to earn the right to hang another banner.
So a lot of really good stuff in there, a lot of things that we could unpack into probably entire full episodes. So the first thing that I'd like to talk about is, you know, with the idea of specificity in mind and the goal being be the best rugby player possible, mm-hmm. not necessarily the fastest sprinter or, you know, strongest weightlifter mm-hmm. possible. What are either mistakes that you see being made in preparation, or things that you feel you guys do exceptionally well that allows you to put being the best rugby player first?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a terrific challenge for me. You know, with this age group, you know, they have, you know, all the information that they could ever possibly need, you know, in their hands. So one of the things that I find more and more important now is just trying to help them focus and stay on task. And that might mean, you know, the guy that, you know, that's kind of true to human nature, he wants to do what he's best at. So if I'm strong, you know, in the training zone, well, I want to do more of that because I'm good at it. And if I've got a high motor and I can run on top of the ground really well, I want to exploit that. And we want to exploit, you know, all of our players' strengths. But one of the things that I'm always constantly encouraging guys and coaching them on is, well, let's go work on the stuff that you're not as good at. And, you know, if there's three points to the triangle, you know, there's kind of a lifestyle component. That's, you know, that's your, you know, how well do you sleep, your nutrition, you know, how well do you recover, you know, all your lifestyle stuff. And then there's the physical prep part. And then there's the skills part of playing the game. And I just try to make sure that I focus those guys on those three points. And everybody's got different things that they're more inclined to do. You know, the guy that's the strongest on the team, you know, might need to work on his skills. And the guy that's probably got the best, you know, nose for the game or brain for the game, maybe he needs to be stronger to be more injury resistant. And you kind of go through each guy on the team, and everybody's prescription is going to be a little bit different. Some guy might be really good at his physical prep and might know the game really well, but, you know, has a little bit too much fun on Wednesday nights. And so he's going to have a different challenge, and that means I'll have to coach him a little bit differently.
So, you know, my brother went here. He didn't play rugby, but he was a beta, mm-hmm. a beta Theta Pi fraternity, and Coach Clark was pretty happy with himself when he told me about, you know, he's like, I got that place shut down.
Well, I think they shut themselves down by their behavior. But, I mean, one of the things that we feel strongly about is that, you know, it's hard to be a high-performance athlete if you don't live in a high-performance environment.
And, yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, not maybe just at Cal, but at other, you know, university settings, you know, some of the fraternities are pretty toxic.
Yeah.
And
I think there's, at least in like pop culture understanding of rugby culture, is that it's like play the game, get drunk, but yeah.
And that's how it is, I'm sure, at a lot of institutions, but not here, not after 137 years of rugby.
Yeah, so. And all those championships. So the next piece in there, you know, we talked about striking this balance between skill acquisition and physical preparation. Within the sport of rugby, there has to be a lot of balance between these sort of competing physical skills.
Right.
So we have a huge aerobic capacity that's needed, as well as speed and power qualities. So from an energetic standpoint, if you can kind of describe for people who might not be familiar, you know, what's going on in a game of 15s or 7s, whatever you'd prefer to talk about.
Sure.
How much are they running? You know, how far are they running? What do they have to be prepared to do?
I think that, you know, it might be a little bit confusing to kind of cross between 15s and 7s just because they're so different. So if we stay with the traditional 15 man version of the game that we play in January to May, I think the short answer is that we have to remember that we're an intermittent sprint sport. And then you just tie that in with a bunch of, you know, really physical moments. One of the hardest parts about our game is the running. A lot of people think rugby and they think, oh, the contact must be brutal, no pads, etc. And that's really not the case. The most physically demanding part of the game is you just have to keep running and running and running. And then you drill down a level and it's about you got to get off the ground. And the best rugby players treat the ground like it's hot. And they don't spend any time on the ground. They get back up on their feet. They return to play as quickly as possible. And that is exhausting. And therefore, kind of the reputation that the game has as being so tough is really around that aerobic endurance, that intermittent glycolic demand that's like that little voice in your head saying, slow down, just lay here for a second, it'll be okay. The best guys don't do that. You know, Coach Clark has an analogy that he's used for years, and that's that you never get fit enough to be comfortable in a game of rugby. What you do is you get more done, and you just get comfortable suffering because you're going to suffer. And yeah, I don't think that it's not any worse than doing a couple 2,000 meter pieces on an erg, or you know, you pick the challenging task, and it just so happens that all of the sport of rugby is very challenging in that regard. So to those energy systems, I think, you know, we're constantly undulating in and out. The speeds vary from obviously standing to walking to a jog to a hard glide. You know, very seldom are we at absolute full speed. And the distances would vary by position, but because everybody gets to run the ball and everybody has to play defense, and it's the same size field as a soccer field, so it's 100 meters by 70 meters, and you're end to end, side to side. You could cover, you know, anywhere from as many as, you know, 3,000 meters to, you know, 7,000 meters in a match, and then interspersed with just that overall distance is wrestling and tackling and some really physical moments.
So that's like about 2 to 4.5 miles. So in my dealings, you know, sport performance training, I see a lot of coaches that get caught up. They hear that number, and soccer coaches, you know, I dealt with a lot of club soccer players before, and the coaches or the parents be like, well, he runs 7 miles a game. And that is such a small statement, right, that has so much information within it, because he covers 7 miles a game, but he doesn't jog it and
there's
he doesn't sprint it.
Yeah.
So what are some of your, you know, methods for developing these, you know, capacity at different distances? Because I remember seeing the rugby players here when I was in school, and they were out doing the, you know, long runs, and they're up in the hills, and they're obviously sprinting and doing everything in between.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as the sports science has continued to evolve, I mean, the guys that are my age that played here, I mean, it was you went for a fire trail run, and you know, now we'd say, well, there's no incline on a rugby field. You know, a rugby field's flat. Well, the carryover was, it's hard. The carryover is the resistance of running up the connector and dealing with that fatigue and that little voice in your head. And what we know now is, you know, we'll still go up into the Berkeley Hills and run the fire trail because it's part of our tradition and our heritage. But what we're doing now is a lot of tempo runs, is just a lot of intermittent sprinting at varying distances and intensities based on where we are in our annual plan. 1 minute runs with a 3 minute recovery. And then there's distances that I provide the different positional groups that they try to hit. And, you know, that would be, you know, just a couple of examples of how we try to tap into those energy systems. And then we introduce the ball and everything changes because now I have to make decisions in the moment. And I mean, the halfbacks, if you will, the guys that wear number 9 and number 10 on their backs, they're going to touch the ball 80 to 90 times a game. Then they're going to have to make a lot of decisions. And those guys are also the guys that are going to really be running a lot because they got to go to where the ball is. So ways to kind of tap into those energy systems, you know, what's the tough part of the game? And then when we introduce the ball, everything materially changes because now it's not just about running and getting off the ground. I've got to get my eyes up and get my brain, my computer functioning so I can not only react react and act, but I also have to be able to communicate. And it's fascinating.
Audiobooks are a great sidekick for summer activities like hiking, laying out at the beach, training, road tripping, just hanging out outside, and more. Listening is a way better way to binge content you love while doing things you love. And Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, which lets you fill your summers with more stories. I just finished up Shoe Dog, the Phil Knight memoir, which was excellent. The Tiger Woods book was very, very entertaining all summer. I'm currently listening to Conscious Coaching by Brett Bartholomew. A lot of great content available on there. Audible helps you listen to more books by letting you switch seamlessly between devices, picking up exactly where you left off. Whether it's on your phone, through your car, from a tablet, or at home on an Amazon Echo, you can get tons of books, hands and eyes free, while doing almost anything. Audible members get a credit every month, good for any audiobook in their store, regardless of price. Any unused credits roll over for the next month. Didn't like your audiobook? You can exchange it, no questions asked. Plus, your books are yours to keep. With Audible, you can go back and re-listen anytime, even if you cancel your membership. Start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/juglife or text juglife to 500-500, and you can do it with audiobooks.
As far as like technology and stuff in tracking things like running volume and those kind of things, do you implement anything that is not necessarily proprietary to you, but do you implement any kind of technologies that you find are worthwhile?
It's a good question, Max, because you know we're strong believers in that our sport should drive the technology, that the technology shouldn't drive the sport. You know, others would say, you know, that you've got any data that you collect, it should be actionable. Is kind of another way of saying it. So what I typically do is knowing that we're a very small shop, it's like, okay, well, who's gonna run that? Oh, me. I'll use some GPS to kind of spot check my work and to make sure that the training sessions are valid and are stressing the guys in the ways that the game will. But I'll do it infrequently. We won't, you know, we've got Catapult here, as you guys probably know, but it's like, well, okay, well, who's gonna not only capture that data, but then who's gonna sift through it and then make an action plan based on it. So, but I'll use it occasionally, sporadically, just because there is a lot of information for rugby union by way of, you know, different matrix. It's interesting in football now where teams are in a very proprietal way are making their own matrix and their own architecture of what's important and what are we going to put a premium on. They don't share any of that. So everybody's kind of in their own silos, I think, to a degree.
Yeah.
And
I'd imagine that because you're a sport coach and strength coach, it actually probably mitigates the need for the technology quite as much.
Right.
Where if it's a strength coach and you know the performance coaches and football coaches operating separately,
right.
that data from football practice, the strength coaches need that to know exactly what happened and know what really happened.
Right.
But since you're involved in the practice planning, yeah, you guys are kind of, I'm assuming, sort of periodizing practice in the same way that strength coaches are going to periodize that part of the training, which is such a simple concept, mm-hmm. I think, but so many people miss out on it.
Yeah.
It's like any strength coach or performance coach or whatever who wasn't applying some sort of phasic structure or periodization plan to the offseason, they'd be like, oh, that guy's a fool.
Right.
But I think there are so many sport coaches who it's all the same all the time, or it's very sporadic and not planned out in terms of their practice volumes and everything. You'd mentioned the ERG. You guys use a lot of non-running modalities in terms of aerobic development?
Yeah, we try to. As we're able, again, we have to use it in kind of subgroups because we don't have 50 of any one thing, so we're going to have to do it in smaller groups. But just to try to take some of the wear and tear off the ankles, knees, and hips. I mean, we have to run a lot for our sport, which means we have to run a lot for training. And so any opportunities that I can find to say, well, let's get on the spin bikes, and we can get really tired in there, and then just to take some of the impact off. The ERG is the one of the tools of the devil, because I mean there's nothing that creates that nauseous feeling in your gut than just to get on there and go. And we're fortunate with Scott Franzen, our new head men's crew coach, okay, write it up for me, coach, tell me, and I'll put some guys on the ERGs, and oh man, it is miserable.
Yeah, I'm personally quite renowned for my 500 meter ERG capabilities.
You're built for it.
You guys got any fast 500 guys go here?
Oh no,
not more than 500 though. Maybe even 400 for me these days.
It is it's something else. To think, that those 500 meter splits and stuff that our guys can keep those ERGs cranking at, it's like, oh. You get some real appreciation.
Yeah, how high do you think the transfer is in terms of being able to run for a long time in rugby between from doing ergs and bikes and everything?
Yeah, I think that nothing replaces running on the field from a muscular demand standpoint, but it kind of gets back to more of a how well can you suffer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whatever device that it is that's challenging that athlete, to just continue to work, is probably going to have quite a bit of crossover. So, obviously it can't be too specialized because, you probably, if I put all our guys in the pool and mm-hmm. said, okay, we're going to do, 3,000 yards, there's going to be some flailing, and some guys aren't going to make it. So it has to have some crossover and some application. But spin bikes, Jacob's ladders, ergometers, a lot of that stuff where you don't have to have a lot of technical expertise. You just got to have some grit. I'm in, man.
Particularly, I think with rugby and the guys are bigger, they're more muscular, especially you get in the props and stuff that much running yardage or meterage, it would really beat their joints up.
Yeah, it can, and that's where we have to, when we get into our traditional season in early January, I mean, we're 90 minutes at the max, but we try to train at most of our activities when we're not teaching or installing something, it's at It's a match intensity by way of speed. So we're running hard at training.
From a standpoint of you having a role, obviously as a strength coach and a sport coach, what about like injuries and stuff and dealing with the rehab process? Does that facilitate that a lot for you, or do you have that kind of transferred out to?
Yeah, well, I would be highly involved with our sports medicine staff, and we're really fortunate enough to have a dedicated athletic trainer, and then that person has an assistant. So there's two people that should know everything about our guys medically.
Right.
And then you know you dovetail into that the team physicians and the head team physician, and you know we would have case conferences where we would sit around a table much like this and we'd go through every single player. Not only would the sports medicine staff be present, but also the academic advisor. So the strength coach, the sport coach, the sports med people in the athletic training realm. And then the academic advisor. So we would look at a 360-degree view of, okay, how's Chad doing? Well, turned his ankle. He's got a high ankle sprain. He's struggling in that business administrative class, you know. And okay, well, let's see. You know,
part of this actually sounds pretty accurate.
Bringing back a lot of memories here.
So
the academic advisor was never pleased with me. Uh-huh. I did sprain my ankle. It was at a sorority invite, and I was dancing like Michael Jackson.
Is there any video evidence of said yeah, incident?
Thankfully, it was before the days of really good cell phone cameras. Yeah. But so the last piece I want to talk about is when you talked about you know that they're people, yeah, and Cal Rugby has this phenomenal team culture. So how does that team culture and everything influence what you guys do in the weight room? You know, from an accountability standpoint, but just right. Run with that.
You know, I think that at the 30,000-foot level, what we're really, really doing, even though we've helped produce more national team players and professional players than maybe all the other universities combined to date, what we're really, really doing is we're using rugby as a vehicle to teach life lessons. And when we get into the day-to-day operations of things, and how does that influence even tomorrow morning's strength session? It's about trust and respect and accountability. So, in our case, you know the guys are, you know they're given the warm up, and then I watch them do it, and I coach them up so I don't let them flounder, but I'm not barking it out at them. And you're in charge of you. You're in charge of getting yourself ready to train. Now I'm going to give you the framework, and which is going to hopefully put you in a position to be successful. But I'm not going to hold your hand and have you, you know, count out loud for me. I want you to get ready. And then that holds true in the strength development stuff that we do. I mean, they're going to log their results, and if they didn't save their work, well, that's like turning in a midterm without your name on it, isn't it? And isn't that the lesson that we're trying to teach? Is you got to be accountable, you know, to your teammates, and that means you got to focus and you got to pay attention. And I'll throw in as much coaching as I can around that. But I mean, that's kind of what it's really about, and that's how it manifests on a day-to-day basis. Is I'm not gonna motivate you. You have to bring your own motivation. But if I can inspire you to put another 10 kilos on the bar and then successfully execute those reps, well, okay, now we're cooking. And that's, we make those kind of distinctions in just kind of how we do business.
Talking about putting another 10 kilos on the bar, do you have any rugby players in mind who are really standout weight room guys? Because our people love hearing about that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got... you know, the guys that come from a traditional American football background, you know, that have been in a high school weight room, those guys, their training age is far beyond a lot of our international student athletes who, you know, they might be more well-versed at the game, but they're kind of awkward in the training zone. What are those shoes? Oh, lifting shoes. They don't know any of that stuff. And it's just different life experiences up to this point. So we try to converge those two. So we'll have some guys that they've never done a power clean before. They don't know what a hook grip is, alongside some high school you know, some accomplished high school football players, maybe from De La Salle,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and those guys are learning from each other, kind of simultaneously. I mean, we've got a boy, he's really comfortable 385 overhead squat. And it's like, now, you know, he's built for that. You know, he would have thrived back in ancient Greece, you know, because he's you know, he's got small levers or short levers, and
like a Chris Biller
kind of a little bit more flexible than Chris, but similar. And so that's kind of that's kind of the soup is a little bit of both. But you know, we've got some guys that it's pretty amazing that they can combine, you know, some real advanced physical strength with then being able to go out and run, like run. And it's like, wow. I mean, Eric Fry would have been one of our examples from years gone by. And he's well into his professional career now in his early 30s. But I mean, he could give you, you know, three reps at 340 pounds on a bench and then go out and run a 1,000-meter shuttle in 3:30 at 250 pounds. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, the real convergence of, you know, having some physical mass, but then being able to run. And a lot of it was he was okay suffering. I mean, he was miserable, but he could do it.
What about the Cal Rugby calf training program? Because there's one thing between you, Coach Clark, and Coach McDonald that I've seen. Cal Rugby makes you have huge calves.
Well,
how are those all coming about?
don't buy any crew socks because they're not going to stay up. Yeah. No, I mean, it's about running and
being big and running a lot.
I mean, we can talk about triple extension. Man, are we really activating our posterior chains? But that's not the case.
Yeah.
It's we picked our parents in a funny way, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, great. I think a lot of good information in there for people, regardless of the sport that they work with, that they can take some of those concepts and go with them. So we're excited for the Cal Rugby season. I've never been to a Cal Rugby game. It's one of my great regrets as a student here that I never did because we were always in track stuff. But I'm going to be back sometime between January and May at a game for sure. Well, so Coach Billups.
Yeah, we'll look forward to having you.
Thank you so much.
As we say around here, go Bears.
Yeah.
Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or Facebook, or you can email me at max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you're interested in online coaching, powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, or power building, visit juggernautcoaching.com for all of that. Subscribe to the YouTube, you know, leave us a 5-star review on the podcast. Tell a friend about it, all that good stuff. You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith, and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. See you next week, and go Bears.
Go Bears, right?